and welcome to the Partners in FinCrime podcast in association with FSCom. My name's Evan McGugan.
And I'm Chris Vaughan.
In this podcast series, we'll be looking to discuss all things anti-financial crime.
We'll be deep diving into cutting-edge stories, as well as other interesting topics in the financial crime space. In this episode, we discuss recent updates to HMT's list of high-risk third countries and some updates to the MLRs.
Hey, Chris, how's it going?
Hi, Evan. Yeah, really good, mate. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad, thanks. Not too bad. I think I'm on the countdown to Christmas now. What about you?
Yeah, we better be by now. It's about that time, isn't it? Winding down a little bit, getting stuff sorted out for the end of the year. Although saying that, then the new year begins and it's just, if you roll back into it, it's always a busy time. There's no getting away from that. Looking forward to a little break, though. How are you getting on?
Yeah, not too bad, thanks. Equally looking forward to a bit of a break. I think the benefit of the Christmas break versus taking 2 weeks off during the middle of the year is your inbox isn't going to be on fire when you get back, or at least it shouldn't be. fingers very much crossed for that. But looking forward to all the festivities, looking forward to going back and seeing some family and then also doing that Christmas tradition of going for the odd pint or two with those people you maybe only see once or twice a year. For that Christmas pint is always a bit of a joy. We've also got our Christmas party to look forward to. I think probably when this will be released, we'll be very much gearing up for that. So looking forward to seeing you in person, certainly.
Yep, I'll be jumping across. That'll be great. Looking forward to it.
What are we talking about this time? I think maybe it's been a pretty hectic year when it comes to FinCrime news anyway. We've certainly discussed a lot. It feels like it's calmed down maybe a wee bit over the past month or so, but potentially a few wee stories that we could discuss. Where do you want to kick things off?
Yeah, you're right. I think it has sort of cooled down a little bit towards the end of the year, it feels like, in terms of some of the main stuff that we would cover off, but it has been a bit of a busy year, it must be said. There's been a couple of pieces that we could look at perhaps in a little bit more detail. One of them is to do with jurisdictional risk, which we've looked at a number of times on this podcast, to be fair. And I think I can't exactly remember when we got this going, but it was around this time last year. So I think we're on for our 1 year anniversary here. And I think we've covered country risk a number of times during that year. So that might be a way to get this one started off. What do you think?
Yeah, quite happy with that. And it's, as you say, I think it was definitely one of the early topics we touched on, and we have touched on it a few times as we've went through the preceding 13 episodes. High-risk third countries, Schedule 3ZA of the MLRs 2017, as we all know, generally, well, it's designed or is expected to follow the FATF lists, and there has been some changes to line up with that. Potentially, we may have even mentioned the changes to the FATF lists previously, so it's maybe just a bit of a public service announcement for those who maybe missed this, but some new additions coming in to Schedule 3ZA and some removals as well. So some quite interesting things in this, actually, particularly with the additions. We'd be talking Bulgaria, obviously a European country anyway, Cameroon, Croatia, again, a European country, Nigeria, South Africa and Vietnam. So Bulgaria, Cameroon, Croatia, Nigeria, South Africa and Vietnam have been added to Schedule 3ZA. Of the UK's high-risk third countries. Also been some removals, and there Albania, Cayman Islands, Jordan and Panama. What's your thoughts on those? Maybe what do firms need to do first off with respect to that? And then maybe we could have a think about what some of these particular jurisdictions might mean for the firm.
Yeah, definitely. I think you're right. I think we have mentioned that these were sort of expected incoming changes. There have been, I think I'm right in saying that there has been a change that didn't include one of the changes that we were expecting, which I think I'm right in saying was South Africa. We're expecting that to come in, and it didn't, to align with the FATF grey list, but now has. And there's obviously been a number of other changes since then, and this broadly brings us back in line again with FATF. That's obviously a big update. I think in terms of your first point there, in terms of what firms should do, clearly this is a piece for risk assessments. The grey list and the blacklist, so to speak, as they call them, will be key pillars of any jurisdictional or whole firm risk assessment. So firms need to be going back and reviewing those, aligning where relevant. Probably the trigger for doing that might even be just the change to the FATF list, but it's almost a domino effect once this comes in, and then you've actually got the regulatory requirement, which is the EDD piece that follows in on that, which is for those countries on that list where you have a business, this is for the UK specifically, but where you have an individual or a relationship where the person is based in a high-risk third country, or you have a transaction going to or from a high-risk third country, then EDD needs to be applied, and there are a specific set of EDD requirements there. So firms need to, first of all, update the risk assessments, make sure those mechanisms for applying that EDD are up to date. We don't want to miss any. Now we're obligated to conduct EDD in those situations. What else? Policy and procedure, obviously, makes sense that would be updated as well. Looking at current exposure and risk that's on your book right now. So, historically, okay, maybe you haven't conducted CDD on relationships with Bulgaria, for example, but maybe you need to go and reevaluate, actually, does the same risk still apply here? Is there anything else that we should be doing? Should we now conduct anyone with exposure to those high-risk third countries to further CDD measures? So I think all that's super important. Yeah, in terms of the general changes, I'm not sure if you've got thoughts on some of the drivers and the reasons behind some of these countries hitting the lists, or just generally the nature of travel. I think that we've seen, and we've talked about before, quite a lot of African countries coming under scrutiny from FATF, and I think that trend has continued with some of these changes. We're now seeing probably more scrutiny on European countries than we've seen, certainly with quite a few hitting the list. We've obviously had previous ones before, like Malta, for example, when that hit, but now we're getting a few more come in, and I think that is really a cause for concern, really, within what we do. Have you got any sort of further thoughts or feelings there?
No, spot on. I think, as you say, it does seem to be that the African countries are finding their way onto these lists more than previously had been the case. I think I haven't had a look at the specific evaluations into each of these countries that have been drivers. Seems to be a bit of variation across the ones I have had a look at, though. So there's maybe not any themes that people would be surprised to see. It's just those wider sort of structural pieces, the legal regulatory frameworks, the efficacy of the local FIUs and so on, criminalization of certain activities, predicate crimes, whatever the case may be. So I think no themes in the underlying points, but it is... Yeah, I think interesting to see those EU countries continue to pop up. Interesting, I think, to see, and correct me if I'm wrong, maybe I'm mixing up my list changes, but the UAE, I think, is still on it. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, still there. It's been expected to come off a few times, but yeah, go on.
So obviously a developing financial centre. Allegations of, some exposure to Russian sanctions circumvention over the past wee bit, but by all accounts has been improving as a jurisdiction, but hasn't come off yet. So that EDD requirement continues to be in play. Interesting, I think, to see the likes of Cayman Islands and Panama come off these lists. Obviously themselves, particularly prevalent offshore financial centres, in sort of global transactional flows. But I think probably a good point to remember is that just because they've come off 3ZA doesn't mean that necessarily you should be considering them to be low risk, just on the basis of not having to do mandatory EDD on them anymore. To bring it back to the point you said at the start, have your country risk assessment, but it has to be multi-source. Use this as an indicator to consider your exposures, align your controls in line with regs, but also consider if you were, involved in capital markets, for example, you may have some exposure to Cayman Islands. You're still going to want to assess, other risk factors that may be in play. But quite interesting, I thought, to see those two come off, because they quite often come up in those sort of laundromats or global sort of financial stories that you do see.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Panama Papers springs to mind, doesn't it? And Cayman being offshore is a big one. No, I obviously agree. I think you're right, though. It's important to mention around that multi-source, also the customer risk assessment. Look, jurisdictional risk is one risk factor, you know, or there may be elements of jurisdictional risk factors within a good customer risk assessment, but overall, it isn't just that, it's not the only thing. So it doesn't mean that all your customers who may have exposure to these countries who've now come off suddenly become low risk customers. Obviously, you know, there's still plenty of risk that persists there. And, you know, it's really about that detail, I think, as you mentioned. It's just a factor to consider, and we should obviously make sure that we're meeting the requirements of the regulation when it comes to EDD, and that's the really important factor, really, for the UK in particular. Depending where you are, if you're in the EU, then obviously it's just understanding what your obligations are. Some are directly to FATF and the FATF list. You know, that actually is referenced in some EU countries' AML regulations, so you should understand where the nuances are. Sometimes it will be to the European Commission list in the EU, so that's also slightly different. But yeah, worth understanding the differences there and where you're actually obliged to apply certain measures versus just sort of an indicator and a risk factor that influences your understanding of the customer in more detail. So
do you have this may be a bit of an open question, but do you have a view on what best practice or good practice might be with respect to, say, you had a sizable component of active customers located in Bulgaria? Like, what would you do in that instance? Do you have a view as to what good or best practice is to sort of treat this, if you're treating it as sort of an event-driven trigger almost? Like, what is good practice when these lists change, when 3ZA changes anyway in particular?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's very difficult to say exactly what the process should be. I think it's worth bearing in mind that, you know, expectations for future customers would be to meet the requirements of the regulation, but there's nothing that would force you to go back and then conduct EDD on past relationships. However, I do think that it's extremely important that you go back and review. So there should be, you know, you should conduct almost a thematic review in your portfolio to understand risk exposures to countries that would have changed in risk over time, just as you would do at any point during, you know, your relationship with understanding a customer's risk over time. You want to keep updating that, reinforming yourself. Is this still appropriate, you know, in the way that a periodic or event-driven review might work? But for country risk, yeah, when there's big events like this and you may have large portions of your portfolio exposed, conducting further reviews, you know, whether that be on an ad hoc basis, you decide to review a sample, or you review maybe all, depending on how large the exposure is. That's a few sort of ideas, I suppose, around what you can do to reinform yourself and update. But yeah, I don't know. Any sort of further thoughts from yourself there?
No, pretty much bang on as far as I'm concerned. I think maybe one thing that maybe springs to mind, though, and it's maybe something you see on audit from time to time. I'm sure you've seen it too. But just aside from the nuts and bolts of what has to be done, just ensuring that you have that adequate governance structure and process to deal with managing the changes that have sort of manifested externally, like obviously go and, you know, change your country risk assessment and so forth. But so many times I'll go in anyway and you'll have a look under the hood of somebody's TM system and you'll see that whilst the all singing, all dancing customer risk assessment in your Excel spreadsheet is aligned, you'll go and have a look at your TM system and it hasn't been updated to align to that. Just making sure really that you have that mature governance framework to make sure you're agile enough to make the changes you need to, have those structures in place to make sure that everything gets done, all the boxes get ticked. Because I think some of this stuff's fairly easy to understand, but as with anything, I think the art of it's in the operationalization, and sometimes that can be slightly lacking.
Actually, that's super important. That's a really good point. I think the idea of dependencies, so right, okay, so we updated our country risk assessment that's on paper, but you know, we need to understand the dependencies, like mechanisms, for example. Mm-hmm. So like, what is our mechanism for making sure mm-hmm. that REDD is scheduled and that it's being conducted to the standard that we now need to? And that, like you say, in many cases these days, it's your systems. So maybe you'll have within either your back end or within whatever system you use for monitoring customers, you'll have a list of countries that are designated certain risk levels that needs to be updated as well. And as you say, it's just about good governance and making sure that across the board you've recalibrated and have a good picture of where you're going. Yeah, that's a really good point.
Yeah, and very rarely automated either. It all needs to be done. That's where things can fall down.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, no, I think that makes a lot of sense. I think that's going to be, you know, something that firms definitely should be taking a look at. I mean, we do talk about jurisdictional risk a fair bit, so hopefully that's something that is front and center of people's minds in terms of getting these updates done. Cool. Are there any final bits to mention on this piece, do you think?
No, I think we've obviously covered this topic a fair bit. So yeah, quite happy to move on, I reckon.
So there's a new piece that's been doing the rounds a little bit, and it's an update in the UK. Do you want to maybe outline the nature of the incoming changes, and we can maybe talk about this? I think this is probably another element that will cause maybe this one's a bit more controversial, you might say.
Yeah, absolutely. So regular listeners of the podcast will remember our discussions on Nigel Farage, and I think even people who aren't in the compliance sphere are well aware of Farage and his case with Coutts. Obviously, the FCA then went and did a bit of a review into that case in question, but also the treatment of politically exposed persons. I think the FCA also, in its four primary financial crime priorities, PEPs is one of them. So it's high on the agenda. And probably as a result of all that, there's some incoming amendments to the UK MLRs, which are due to come in the 10th of January 2024. So just when people are coming back from their Christmas holidays, we've got a bit of regulatory change. And it's quite an interesting one. For a while now, I think the UK's had almost a bit of a gold-plated approach to PEPs. Insofar as the UK has treated domestic PEPs to present the same risk, at least from a regulatory perspective, as foreign PEPs. The change is now that, quote-unquote, the starting point of an assessment as to whether or not a customer or potential customer presents a low level of risk is that it's a domestic PEP versus a foreign PEP. So at a very high level, unless we have any indication of enhanced risk factors, we are to assume that a domestic PEP is not as risky from a financial crime perspective as a foreign PEP. So a bit of a change as to how firms need to potentially treat PEPs as they come across them. Probably may have some personal views on that, and maybe we can get into it in a wee bit, but what's your initial sort of view on this upcoming change?
Yeah, I think that gives a good outline. I think maybe it's an interesting one, largely because of the wider context, as you say. So you're obviously right to mention the Nigel Farage piece there. We actually did a bit of a deep dive episode on that whole case, which listeners can go back and have a little look at if you want to. I think that was actually, you know, a relatively decent breakdown of the ins and outs of what happened there, and that's kind of sparked this review and this whole intrigue, I suppose, which has changed the approach here, and we have obviously seen the amendments now come in, which is going to change this approach to domestic PEPs, as you mentioned. I think the reason I mentioned at the beginning of this bit that it's controversial, I think, is it's relatively rare to see measures get repealed almost, and for us to say, okay, now we're going to take not a stringent approach, rather than actually saying, okay, well, you know, we're ramping up regulation in certain areas. So I think that's relatively uncommon, saying that, you know, requirements are going to reduce for certain customers, particularly I think when it comes to PEPs, who, as we know, have always been a sector of your potential customer base that would pose a much higher risk than any other, and it's sort of jarring maybe to see that the indication that we're going to have a more lax approach. I will say it's definitely worth bearing in mind that the word is lower rather than low. I think that's extremely important, that, you know, risk-based approach is extremely important. And just because a domestic pet may pose a lower risk definitely doesn't mean that, that, you know, you can just take a low risk approach. It's not, that's not what the change will be. Yeah, I suppose perhaps because we're compliance people and it feels like maybe a backward step rather than a positive move forward for, you know, for what we would want to see. I'm not quite sure if there's more to be said on it. But yeah, for me, it is a little jarring, probably isn't what I would determine to be best practice, and maybe even wouldn't necessarily indicate that things should be done much differently at firms. Mm. Only that, you know, I suppose that measures may be more reduced from now on, and you may be able to avail of that, I suppose. What do you think?
Yeah, it's a good point, actually, on the fact that this doesn't mean that domestic pets aren't high risk overall. That is absolutely still the case. The FCA and their guidance has always been quite clear in the fact that there is high risk pets and low risk pets. So I guess on the face of it, not a lot may change. I think certainly I wouldn't advise that maybe a huge deal does change, and maybe the only change is that firms may treat foreign pets as more generally higher risk than domestic pets, but domestic pets will continue to be high risk overall. I think it is a tough one, though. Obviously, a bit of an ongoing news story at the minute regarding allegations of corruption involving a member of the House of Lords, and you do see quite regular allegations of impropriety in the House of Commons, be that financial or no. And it does sort of feel to me, this is personal views on my own, but it definitely feels like a backward step in at least the tone from the top and the priorities of, if not the regulators, and certainly the government and statutory instruments and whatever else. I think it's probably not the right message. I think the whole approach to PEPs is probably a bit wonky anyway, and in my mind, like, you could now sort of envisage a position where we take the idea that you only treat those in truly prominent positions, together with the fact that domestic PEPs are lower risk. You could easily see a situation where you maybe don't apply the level of enhanced due diligence that's maybe requiring of it. Not all PEPs are bad, that's evident, but you do need to be looking at these things, and my fear would be that just the tone is maybe a bit wrong on this. I think we probably need to have a bit of a think about how to deal with PEPs a bit better. I've also always sort of considered the fact that PEPs are probably at their riskiest when they leave office, and the fact that we have this blanket approach to not treat them as PEPs just because they've left after a year is also wrong. So I don't know, I'm maybe sort of climbing onto a bit of a soapbox here, so I'll step off it, but it's a bit of a change, but I'm not sure it's necessarily a move in the right direction. And as you say, very unusual, a change to the regs to result in less work for the compliance department, so that's a really good point.
Yeah, not half. Yeah, and indeed, I think you're right. I think the only thing I'd maybe say there, that the most important thing for me, I think, is just that the assessment doesn't change. That's extremely important. You know, I think that the assessment on an ad hoc basis where this occurs should be extremely in depth to understand the risk profile of PEPs on a case by case basis, because all the risk associated with every PEP is going to be different in every single case. There are detailed nuances obviously associated with that level of risk, and I think it's just really important that the assessment is well formulated, you know, all the things that we would usually expect to see going into that assessment and ongoing measures. I think so. I do get it, you know. I understand, particularly in the case of, for example, where this isn't exactly related, but you know, with the Nigel Farage incident, we had the sort of the talking point was around either denial of services or, you know, Pep's, for example, not being able to get access to services. I'm not saying that's actually what the case was. I'm just saying it was a talking point at the time, sort of popped up. And I see why there's this approach, maybe. And you know, we've said before on this podcast that some firms do still have that approach where they say no to Peps, just a sort of a blanket approach. And I think that that isn't necessarily quite right either.
Yep.
You know, my feeling on it is that we should be well resourced and have the capability as compliance outfits to be able to take on that risk, but just making sure that we manage the risk appropriately. But you can sort of see where it's come from, but I agree with you, broadly speaking, this feels like a bit of a backward step, but still think that it's case by case, and it has to remain sort of case by case when it comes to your approach and you're dealing with these cases. The assessment needs to be detailed. That's all I'm trying to say, I suppose. Yeah,
I think that's exactly it, actually. Like, every sort of high-risk case should be case by case. Peps in particular should absolutely be the case. Tough to make a broad generalization on the basis of domesticity versus not. But yeah, watch this space, I suppose. Be interesting to see whether the benefits outweigh the negatives of this particular change.
Yeah, agreed. It is a bit of a, let's see how it develops. I hope that it doesn't really result in much of a change, to be honest. But yeah, let's see. Hopefully that sort of gives our thoughts on that piece a little bit. You know, it has been a bit of a talking point, particularly on places like LinkedIn, for example, for a while, and it's popped up on a lot of the compliance news websites. So it is definitely something to be aware of if you're operating in this space. So that, I think, leaves us with not much else to talk about today. So we'll perhaps do a sign-off, shall we?
Absolutely. Bit of news, maybe before we jump off, Chris.
Yeah. So kind of, you know, wanting to close out. I'm actually moving on from FSCom, unfortunately, which means I will be ceasing to be a podcaster. I will cease to be a partner in FinCrime. So, the boos in the background, I can hear them. I understand. So, you know, one of those things. So I'll be moving on to Pastures New next year. And this will be the sort of the final closing podcast from my side. I guess it remains to be seen what happens with the partners in FinCrime from here, Evan.
we'll be having a new addition to the podcast to join me on all these discussions, financial crime and anti-financial crime. Big shoes to fill, I think, safe to say. But good luck with all your future endeavors, and I dare say there may be a special guest appearance or two in the near future for Mr. Chris Vaughan.
I would like to hope so. Yeah. I will reserve my right to appear as a guest at my request, at whim. No, that sounds good. Obviously, it's been great and lovely to sort of, it's a nice thing to be able to do as well, as to, you know, take something that we do on the day to day and sit down and have a chat about it. And hopefully break down some of the issues. So we've done that it's over a year now, I think. So it's been really good road. So it is a shame to be calling quits, but you know, someone will pick up the reins, and I'm sure it'll continue to be really useful and informative for people. So yeah, it's just a bye for now, I suppose.
Absolutely. Bye for now. Well, been a pleasure. And we, as mentioned at the start of the podcast, we obviously have our Christmas party. So well, the Partners in FinCrime podcast team, but also the rest of FSCom, will be giving you a good old send off on that. So looking forward to it. But yeah, great to have got speaking to you over the past few bits on these podcasts, and onwards and upwards.
Indeed. Cheers, mate. It's been great. So I guess we'll wish everyone a Merry Christmas, shall we? And that'll be us for now.
Absolutely. Merry Christmas and a very happy New Year as well for everybody who's listening.
Absolutely. See you all in the new year.